Not today is based on this week's parsha, but I want to start off by saying, you know, if we look at like all the events in history, in Jewish history, the last greatest event that happened to the Jewish people is the return to the land of Israel. The return to the land of Israel is the realization of prophecies. It's the fruition of dreams and hopes of 2,000 years. So, but then once we've got here, so now the question is, what's next? Right? What do we do next? So there's many places to try and look for the answer. I think that there's a very interesting answer in the beginning words of this week's parsha. So if you look at the first source, so it says, "Ve'ela ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifnehem." Right? These are the laws that you will put before them. And Rashi says, "Ve'ela means that they're connected to what happened before. So what happened before was the giving of the Torah. So now how are these laws connected to the giving of the Torah? Well, the Midrash has an interesting twist on it. If you take a look at the second source, it says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Kol HaTorah Tluya B'Mishpat. The entire Torah is dependent on Mishpat, on the laws. L'chach Natan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Dinin Achar Aser Tadibrot, Lefi Shahbriot Ma'avirin Al Hadin, V'hu Nifra Mehem U'Melamed Et Va'ei Olam. So he says like this, the Torah is totally dependent on the laws. And that's why they were given after the Aseret HaDibrot. But why, you ask, is the Torah dependent on the laws? So the Midrash tells you, because they teach people how to behave. The fact of the matter is that the Torah is coming to teach us how to bring the world to perfection, how to bring the world to harmony. But you can't just bring the world to Gan Eden without effort, and without the fact that man needs to be taught. We go around and we just do whatever we want to do, and the Yetzer Hara, as it were, gets people to do all kinds of things that are going to bring conflict and as opposed to harmony to the world. So now, how are you going to bring this perfection and harmony? Through laws. The laws are there not to punish the people, but to teach the people. That's what it says here. He says that the Midrash says the people are violate the laws, and then the laws come and exact their consequences in order to teach the people of the world. So the whole point of the laws are to teach us how to behave and how to bring the world to the perfection that it was created for. So the laws are the very way that you bring about the goal of the Torah, which is to bring peace and harmony to the world. Okay? So now that we understand the importance of the Mishpatim to the very essence of the Torah, so now the Tur, who, for those of you, I imagine that you're familiar with, that the Tur made a whole codex of laws that extends over everything that a person would do, from getting up in the morning to going to bed at night, and all of the commerce and everything that goes on in between. Now, there's one section called Choshen Mishpat, and the Choshen Mishpat is all about jurisprudence. It's all about laws and courts and litigation. Okay, now the introduction to that, the Tur makes a couple of very interesting observations. The first one he says is that it says, Al Gimel Dvarim Ha'olam Kayam, Al Hadin V'Al Hamet V'Ha Hashalom. So he says that the world exists based on these three things, on law, on truth, and on peace, right? But then he says, but wait a minute, we know there's another Pirkei Avot that says, Ha'olam omed al shlosha dvarim, al ha-Torah, al ha-Avodah, al gimilut chasadim. So he says, so what's the difference between these two sets of threes, right? So he says that the second set that we read was really the first in the Mishnah, is about really the whole purpose that the world was created for. It was created for the Torah, for the Avodah, which means connecting to God, and for Gemilut Chasadim, which means doing good things between people. That's why the world was created. But how does the world continue to exist? That's the other set of three, through laws and truth and through peace. And what he explains here is that the laws are, like we said, the laws in order to keep everybody in line and to teach people how to behave. And the emet is also the same kind of thing. There's laws and there's the truth behind these laws. And then the peace is the peace that is brought about through the laws. That if there wasn't this whole system of justice, so then you would not get any peace. And he brings the quote from Pirkei Avot that man would eat his fellow alive. Go ahead.
So is one ideal and one reality?
Well, in a sense, I suppose you could look at it that way. I think one is true as the ideal, and the other one is how to go about getting to it. Okay? All right. So now he goes on and he says, now so important are these laws that if you take a look sort of in the middle where I have it bolded, so that right before the bolded letters it says, Kol hadan din emet l'amito ki'ilu na'asa shutaf l'kadosh baruch hu b'ma'aseh bereishit. So he says that so important are the laws that those people that maintain the laws, meaning the judges and the lawyers and the court systems, everybody that has a hand in maintaining justice in society, they are partners in creation. Because God created the world, like you said, for the ideal of the Torah and the Avodah and the Gemilu Chasadim, but that's not going to happen if you don't have the din, the emet, and the shalom. And the way you have din, emet, and shalom is through the Ma'arechet Mishpat. It's through the court systems and through the system of justice. Okay, so now he's elevated the whole system of justice to being a partner with the Creator himself. That's amazing. But the tour goes on and says another amazing point, which I have highlighted. It's the second or third line from the bottom. It says, Ki hamishpat hu yesod ve'ikar gadol ba'avodat Hashem. So he says that the justice is actually the foundation and fundamental of worshiping God or of connecting to God. So whereas we thought before that you have these two sort of separate sections of law, you know, you have your religious laws, your man and God laws, and you have your social laws, the man and man stuff. He says they're both the same. They come together. That mishpat that you would have said is completely just to get man and man together is really about worshiping God. We connect to God through our interactions with man and through the justice system that helps us all communicate and flow and act in harmony with one another. Now, so much so is this a religious principle that Rav Kook says as follows. Hamishpatim heim kodesh kodeshim beYisrael. The mishpatim, this system of laws, where you know if this ox gored this guy's ox, or if this guy trampled in this guy's yard, all these little nitty gritty things. He says these are the holy of holies. Okay, and he goes on and he says, "V'al ken hismicha shehi noset shem Elohim alea." And so much so is this a holy thing, all these rules that seem very mundane, that God's name is attached to the name Mishpat, to the name laws. So I did a little search to see where in the Tanakh we find Elokei Mishpat or Mishpatei Elokim or things like that. And I found a very interesting quote in Yeshayahu. So Yeshayahu, it says as follows, Vo'oti yom yom yidroshun, v'dat darachai yechpatsun, kegoy asher tzedaka asa u'mishpat Elohav lo azav. So it says here that, I'll just read the English translation, yet they seek me daily and desire to know my ways as a nation that did righteousness and forsook not the ordinance of their God, meaning the Mishpatei Elohav. And then he goes on and he says here, Yishaluni Mishpatei Tzedek Kirvat Elohim Yechpatsun. So they will seek of me these righteous judgments, and closeness to God is what they desire. So he puts the two together, that righteous laws are what brings us close to God. That's amazing, right? That means that the system of justice is just as important to connecting to God as the Mikdash or the Beit Knesset or the Beit Midrash or any other things that we sort of envision as having religious connotations. Okay, so now that we've understood... Yeah, go ahead. Now that we understood how important the whole system of justice is, okay, it comes as no surprise that there's many, many mitzvot associated with this, but the most fundamental of them comes out from this pasuk in Mishpatim. So now if we were to say, like, what's the pshat in Eila, it says, Ve'eila ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifnehem. So Rashi brings the first pshat, which is, Moses put these laws in front of the people that they will do them, right? But Rashi brings a second pshat, which is exactly this Gemara, which interprets it slightly different. It says as follows, Ve'eila ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifnehem. Lifnehem velo lifnei ovdei kochavim. Devar acher lifnehem velo lifnei hedyotot. So now the Gemara is interpreting the verse. Instead of saying, place these laws in front of these people, It's saying, place these lawsuits. The mishpatim are your lawsuits, your claims, your legal cases. Place them before them, lifnehem. Who's before them? Before Jewish judges, not before non-Jewish judges, and not before Jews who are not judges. Okay? So now, this again is what Rashi brings as the second shot on this verse, and Rashi also explains why. So here's what he has to say on the Pasuk in the Torah. Velo lifnei goyim, va'afilo yadata bedin, yediat bedin echad shehem danim, yadata bedin echad shehem danin oto kedinei Yisrael, even if you know that the non-Jewish court is going to judge according to Jewish law, al taviehu ba'erkot shelahem. Do not bring this to their court systems. Okay, why? Shehamevi dinei Yisrael lifnei goyim mechalel et Hashem umeyaker shem avodah zara lehachshiva. So now he says something really amazing. He says, if you go and take your court case to a non-Jewish court, even if they're going to judge according to the laws of the Torah, you are basically giving a hand to idol worship, right? He says that you're mechalel Hashem and you praise idol worship. Now the commentators all say here that it's not specifically idol worship, but any non-Jewish court is considered under the rubric of giving praise to idol worship. And why is that? Because idol worship is not about bowing to statues or burning incense in temples to who knows what. Okay, idol worship is replacing the moral arbitration of the Creator with some other moral arbitration. A God has power only because he says what is right and what is wrong. When the snake told Adam and Eve, you will be like God, knowing right and wrong, it's because when they ate from the tree, they said, yeah, God said that's wrong, but we don't care. We know what's right and wrong, and this tree looks good, so we're going to do it. That's what it's all about, okay? That's what it's all about. Whether we're going to accept God as our moral arbiter, if we're going to accept God as the legislator who says this is right and this is wrong, or we're going to accept some other definition. The minute you accept some other definition of right and wrong, you're idol worshiping. It could be your own sense of whatever it is, of justice or of rightness or of whatever. It could be the definition of the country you live in or of the religions that they make up. It doesn't matter. It's all idol worship the minute you reject God as the definer of right and wrong. Okay? And so that's why it's so important to not bring cases to be judged as right or wrong to people who don't use God as their system. Even if they use that law, particularly if they didn't accept God and his system, so you're just giving credence to their overall system. Now, if you turn the page, the Rambam gives another explanation as to why you shouldn't do this. And he says, Kol hadan b'dinei akum ube'erkot shelahen, af al pi shehayu dineihem kedinei Yisrael, harei ze rasha, v'ki'ilu chiref v'gidef v'herim yad b'torat Moshe Rabbeinu. So now he says that anybody who goes and has their case adjudicated in the court systems of the non-Jews, even if they use the Jewish system, he is a wicked person, and it's as if he blasphemed, okay? As if he cursed God, and he raised his hand against the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, again, it's the same idea that the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu is really the outcome of what was given by God. It is the contents of God's laws of right and wrong. And so the minute we go to another court, we are basically saying, we don't care about God, we don't care about his Torah, we don't need any of that stuff. And so we have this rule that we must go to Jewish courts that are judged by Jewish judges who understand Jewish law, right? And that's brought as halacha lemaaseh, asur. It is forbidden, says the Shulchan Aruch. This is a psak halacha. It is forbidden to judge in front of non-Jewish judges, uberkot shelahem, and in their court systems. Afilu bedin shedanim bedinei Yisrael, even if they use a certain Jewish law, va'afilu nitratzu shnei balei dinin ladun befnehem. And even if the both sides of the case, you know, there's Shimon is suing Reuven, he got in a car accident, and they both agree to go to the court in America, they are not allowed to do it. Okay, it's a violation of Jewish law. Now, the Ramban makes it an interesting distinction, and he says, now, we learned in the Gemara that you're not allowed to go to non-Jewish courts, and you're not allowed to go to courts run by Jewish laymen, meaning people who didn't study Mishpat Ivri, right? So he says, now, there's a difference, though. The Ramban says like this, the underlined part, he says, She'im ratzu shnei ba'alei hadin lavo lifnei ha'hedyot shebi Yisrael mutar hu. So what he says is like this. He says that although you're not allowed to go to a non-Jewish court, and you're not allowed to go to a court that's run by Jews that don't know Jewish law, nevertheless, if two parties, Reuven and Shimon, in the car lawsuit, let's say, if they both agree to go to a couple of Jews to arbitrate, not as a court system, but as arbitration, then they are allowed to do that, okay? And that's the difference, but you're not allowed to go to non-Jewish system at all, okay? But to Jews, to arbitrate for you, you're allowed to go, okay? You're just not allowed to go to a Jewish court that's not run by the standards of Mishpat Ivri, which all of you should be saying in the back of your head, what about the court system in Israel, which we will talk about in a minute, okay? Yeah.
Everywhere.
Exactly. Right, but in Israel you've got Jews running the courts, but not according to Jewish law. So you could go to an arbiter. You could go to somebody who will say, "Let's hear what you've got to say," and I think that it's fair that you pay him this and that. That's okay. But to go to a Jewish court system is another story. Okay. So now, just to bring one last quote to tell you the importance of the Mishpatim in the Torah, the Rashba says, he says that if we were to judge our cases according to non-Jewish law, or we were not to use our Torah, he says, what's the point of the Torah? He says here in the underlined spot, Ma lanu sifrei hakodesh. We have no need for the entire Torah, for the Gemara, for all of our holy books. He says, you can wrap them in sackcloth, meaning you can throw them in the trash. The whole point of all our holy books is to adjudicate and to bring tzedek u'mishpat to the society, that we're supposed to have righteous laws. If we're not using the Torah for that purpose, I don't know what you're doing with these books, says the Rashba. Okay? So did you want to say something?
I have a question. I have a law to abide by the rules of the society you're living in.
Yes, okay.
So which one?
So I'll get to that. There's Dina de Mulchuta Dina, which you're supposed to abide by the laws of the society. Those are when they don't contradict the Torah laws. But we'll see in a minute when you can go to the courts for those kinds of things and when not. Okay? So I'll give you, in the next page, there's a very specific list. Okay? So now, now that we understand all of this, so that brings us to the point that I just mentioned, and that is that in Israel, the court systems were set up based on the laws that were existing in the country pre-state, meaning based primarily on the British and partly on the Turkish and nothing on the Jews. And this is really a terrible situation. Rav Herzog, who was the first chief rabbi of Israel and was witness to this basically formation of the court systems based on British rule, had this to say. He says, "Kimat." Shelo haya yachol la'alot al hadat shel shum yehudi dati shamedina hayehudit ta'azov makom mayim chayim et toratenu hakadosha lachtzov la borot borot nishbarim. He says, a religious Jew could not possibly fathom that the state of Israel, the state of the Jews, would found its court systems not based on Jewish law. He says, it's completely ununderstandable. And he goes on, and he explains, Omnam, of course, kach hu nahug bekol eretz hanichbeshet. He says, of course, any other peoples that are conquer a nation, or take over a land, or start up a country, so they use whatever laws were in place, right? That's just the way of the world. But why? So he says, "Shemishirim et achok hakayam mikvar sheloli grom tzuzot v'zazuim." He says because they just took over a country. They don't want to shake things up too much, so they'll leave the existing laws in place. It's enough that they're changing the rulership. They'll leave the existing laws in place and maybe make certain little kind of cosmetic changes, right? But he says that's not us. Ach b'me'a dvarim omurim. But what are we talking about? Be'umot she'ein lahen mishpat. We're talking about people who have no laws. We are the Jewish people. We are the people of the book. That book, as the Rashba says, is a book of laws to run a society. How could dare you take a book of laws that were from people who have no idea what law is? We brought the law to the world. How can you reject that? So now, this has definitely given religious Jews no amount of consternation throughout the generations. In 1980, the Beit Mishpat Elyon took this to heart, and they did make some kind of reference to Mishpat Ivri, and I'll read you here. It says, Chok Yesodot HaMishpat was in 1980. It says, Ra'a Beit HaMishpat She'ila Mishpatit Hatuna Hachra'a. If there's some court that sees that it has to make some kind of legal decision, but it didn't find anything in legislation to tell them how to make their verdict, and they had no other way to try and make the sentencing of this case, yachria ba leor ekronot hacherut hatzedek hayosher v'hashalom shel moreshet Yisrael. Then they should make their judgment based on the principles of freedom, justice, virtue and righteousness, peace, that is all part of the tradition of Israel. So this is sort of an implication that they could use Mishpat Ivri, meaning Torah laws, if they have no other way. So it's nice. It's not a complete remedy to what we've been talking about, but at least there's a reference now to using our holy laws to implement the peace and foundation that they were meant to implement. Now, there's another issue. So now, if we said you're not allowed to go to courts, right? So now, you're not allowed to even go to the courts in Israel, because these are people who are not judging according to Torah law, even if they are in some cases. Their system of justice is not based on our system of justice. It's not based on Mishpat Ivri. So how are we to look at these laws? So these were discussed by many, many people throughout the founding of the state, and I bring to you basically the primary argument for looking or trying to look at the Batei Mishpat, the court system in Israel, as having some kind of legitimacy. They quote this Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Kaf Gimel, which talks about Erkaot Shebasuria. Okay, these court systems that were in Syria in the times of the Gemara. And what were those court systems? So the commentaries would explain that there were no people to set up a good and solid Jewish court with Jewish judges. So the people, the Jewish communities, decided to get together, whoever were the wisest people, even though they didn't know Torah law, and they would sit in judgment, and they were accepted, and that was better than going to the non-Jewish courts that were in place at that time. You want to say something?
Yeah, I like the idea that even people who weren't learned, like they had that sort of wisdom, because it seems like before there was an implication that without an assumption that people don't have common sense.
Right. So no, you're going to see that explicitly, right? That there is common sense, and we do rely on that in certain cases. But I mean, you wouldn't go to a court where you had a million-dollar case unless you know that somebody's really got a lot of wisdom behind them, or ideally Mishpat Ivri, that they have this experience and a system of justice behind them. Okay, so what you're talking about is arbitration, and the Ramban already referred to that you can go to arbitration, but ideally you do need a court system which is run by judges, that's what they do with their life, is learn and adjudicate. So now the Ramah brings this idea of Erkaot Shebasuria as halacha lemaaseh. And he says as follows, "Va'ayarot she'ein bahem hachamim haruim liot dayanim." So in cities where there aren't judges, people that know the how to adjudicate, or shekulana meha'aretz, or they're just people who are just laymen, v'tzrichim lahem dayanim sheyishpatu b'nehem shelo yelchu lifnei erkaot shel ovdei kochavim. So he says, but they need to have some kind of system of justice so that they don't go to the court systems of the non-Jews, because we saw that's a very bad thing to do, because you're blaspheming God, you're raising your hand against Torah Moshe. So now we don't want to go there. So now they're saying we can set up our own court, even though we don't have Jewish judges that are learned in jurisprudence. Mamanim hatovim v'hachamim shebahem. So they appoint the good and the wise among them, ledat anshei ha'ir, according to how all the people in the city feel. And even though they're not fit to be judges, so he says, and once the people of the community have accepted them as their judges, so to speak, no one can say you're not legitimate. Okay, so now the question is, does this fit the law, the legal system, the court system in Israel, or not? So now there's a lot of debate about this. The Chazon Ish here explains that what this allows is arbitration, what are known as courts of equity, where you have people that use their own wisdom, like you said, which use their own sense of fairness and righteousness, and they will try to figure out when people come to them, but it's not a system of justice. It's not a court system, okay? And it's not based on other laws. So now, because of that, the Chazon Ish completely delegitimizes the secular court system in Israel, because it's a court system not just based on some people sitting there and saying, let's go by what we think is wise and fair. No, they say, let's go by what we know the British ruled like. And then let's go by what we know the Turks ruled like. And then we'll go by what we think is fair and nice. And then we'll look at Mishpat Ivri. It's all like sort of further down the line. But there is in place a system. And so because of that, the Chazon Ish says that you cannot go to the court systems in Israel, except for certain cases, which we will see in a minute. Now, there are other opinions. The Meiri, in his Beit HaBechira, explains Erkaot b'Shebesuria in a very interesting way. He says, "Be'erkaot Shebesuria, shelo hayo biki'in b'din Torah." In these courts in Syria, they didn't know the Torah justice. Ela shedanin la'omed hadat. Rather, they adjudicated according to subjective judgment, ubichukim, and according to laws, whatever they may be, venimusim, and according to customs. So now, people go to town on this, because now the Meiri is saying, these erkaot, they're not as limited as the Chazon Ish had us understand. He says that they use subjective judgment, they use chukim, a system of laws, and they use customs. So now, with that, Professor Menachem Alon, who wrote a three-volume set of books called Mishpat Ivri, so he says that this Meiri gives us the legitimacy to say that Israeli courts are exactly like the Erkaot Shebesuria. They're the court systems in Syria. They have just as much legitimacy as those courts in the Gemara times have the courts today, based on this Meiri, that they're using the laws that were around. Okay? Now, he's pretty much a minority opinion. The Rav Gorin at the time agreed with him with one deference, and that is that this applies when there are no people around to be judges according to Mishpat Ivri. So if you were in some place, I don't know, some town in Israel where there was nobody there to judge according to Mishpat Ivri, so then you could say use this explanation of Professor Alon through the Meiri. Okay? Otherwise, you can't. Okay? Now, Rav Bleich also has a very interesting article about it, and he basically explains the Meiri similar to the Chazon Ish, and he says that you can use other laws, Like, you could even use, say, some British law or some Syrian law, some kind of law, other laws, but not as a system. The minute you say, our system is the British system, so now you're violating the whole idea of setting up a court system based on Mishpat Ivri. So even he would not agree to accepting the complete legitimacy of the Israeli court system. So if you turn the page, so what are we supposed to do? Okay, and this goes for America or for Israel, according to the opinion that the Israeli court systems are not a legitimate system because they do not base themselves on Mishpat Ivri. So there are many cases, nevertheless, where you can go and you have not violated the Isur of the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, one is, first of all, Rav Bleich explains, Kol inyan she'eino matzrich hitdainut. So he says that the primary function of the court system is litigation. Okay, litigation means judging between right and wrong, between two people, two contradictory claims. You say I owe you money, I say I don't owe you money, you say, you know, we had this agreement, I say we didn't have that agreement. Things between two people, that you need to go to a Jewish court with Jewish judges. And in every country that the Jews have ever been in throughout history, including this one today, there is what's known as Batei Din Rabbanim, the rabbinical courts, and that's where you have to go for these kinds of issues. Okay? However, if there's what's called non-adversarial, something where there is not a competing judgment, where the judge doesn't have to actually make a decision between right and wrong. Rather, he's just there for some kind of perfunctory reason. Like, for example, Rav Bleich brings a will. Okay, let's say that there's a will and it says, you know, Johnny gets this much money and Sarah gets this much money, and nobody's arguing. They're all just listening and they read the will and now they're divvying up the money. So you need a court to make it official and to execute the will, right? But nobody's arguing about it, so that could be done by a secular court, by a non-Jewish court, it doesn't matter. It's not the court, the isur, the court of raising your hand against Moshe does not apply here. So too with these other things here. For example, Seiruv. Let's say that, you know, you brought somebody to court, you said, oh, this guy hit my car and he's not paying, and you bring him to the Beit Din, and he refuses to come. So now you can go to the Beit Din, you can say, look, I told the guy to come, he didn't come. So the Beit Din says, okay, take him to secular court, they'll force him to come. So in that case, you could use a secular court wherever you are. Hazmana lebeit mishpat kenitba. If you're the defendant, if somebody is suing you and they're bringing you to a non-Jewish court or to a non-religious court, you're allowed to go to that court and defend yourself. You don't need to lose by not appearing. Mishpat neged lo yehudi. It stands to reason that a non-Jew is not going to want to come to the Beit Din into a Jewish court, and so therefore you can go to court if you have some claim against a non-Jew. You can go to the other courts. Okay, tzav miniyah. Tzav miniyah is that you place an injunction. Let's say that, you know, I've got a claim against this guy, and I know he's going to go, he's got this business, and I want to freeze his assets before he goes and liquidates them, and then I will have no way to get my money that he owes me, or that I claim he owes me. So now you can do this, you can place an injunction, but the Beit Din may not have the ability to do that, and a secular court will. So you can use the secular court to do that, and they freeze his assets, and then you can sue him in the rabbinical court. Also, sometimes there's a possibility to get the secular court to enforce a decision of the religious court. Or now, this is also everything connected with society outside that's run by according to the rules of society and safety of society. So, for example, plilim, criminal cases are judged in the secular courts in order to have the society run safely, right? Then also taxes. The ruling authority, whether it's a government or a king, is allowed to place taxes on the people in order to have the country run. So they make their laws of taxes. A person who makes this much money pays this much. A person who lives in this area pays this much. All kinds of different rules that the country's allowed to make. So too, those rules are allowed to be judged in their courts, and they don't have to be in a religious court because they're their laws. They're laws that pertain to the running of the society as they defined it. Also, going to the army. So the country has the right to draft people, and they also have the right to put people in jail if they don't come, or whatever rules there are. So those are all kinds of reasons that one could go or be found in a secular court. And finally, the issue of dina de mochuta dina. So these also sort of fit into the rules of the country, are the rules that we must follow. Those are, of course, as long as they don't go against the Torah laws, right? But like I said again, the main division is, as Rav Bleich explained, is when there's litigation, when there's a need to make some kind of judgment between right and wrong. So now that has to be done within the court system of the Batei Din HaRabbaniim, or ideally in the Israeli court system that would be run according to Mishpat Ivrit. So now that we're in this situation, is there any hope to try to remedy this? Now that we saw one remedy was this Hoka Yesodot in 1980, but Rav Herzog already before this said, you know, I can learn something from this Erkaot of Syria, from the court systems in Syria. Now, I don't believe that the court systems in Syria, says Rav Herzog, provide us a way to legitimize the Israeli secular court system. But we do see a leniency that I think we can apply to try and help the Israeli court system. And he says as follows, She'im lo nitchakem al pi emtza'a zot, alu sheyitkabel chaz v'shalom kodex goyim lesefer hamishpatim, v'ze garua od mehitdainut shel yechidim lifnei erkaot shel nochrim. Okay, so now what he's saying here, he says, is that we should be putting into the Israeli court system people who do understand Mishpat Ivri, people who could judge according to Mishpat Ivri. And even though we just said that you shouldn't have anything to do with a non-Jewish court system or a court system that's not based on Mishpat Ivri, nevertheless, he says we can learn from, or he will say in a second, we can learn from the Syrian courts in the times of the Talmud, that it's better than going to a non-Jewish court. At least you'll have a court of people, of laymen. So he says, so too, we can see that we can make a parallel and say, we should have religious people or people who appreciate Mishpat Ivri in the system that's not run according to that, so that at least we'll inject the system with our values. And that's better than leaving the state of Israel bereft of any Jewish influence, and then they'll have this whole codex of laws from the state of Israel that have nothing to do with the laws of the people of Israel. And so he says, if you just read the next sentence, "Ukeshem shehem zichrono libracha zot amer chazal," that then just as the sages hitkinu lohoshiv dayanei bur kedei limno halicha leerkaot shel nochrim, and this is a reference to the Syrian courts, that just as Chazal allowed for laymen to act as judges in order that the Jews wouldn't go to the non-Jews, kach anu nanehig kabbalah kolelet limnoa et ha-medina ha-yehudit milekabel chaz v'shalom sefer mishpatim shel goyim. And so too, we will put in place Jews who understand the value of Mishpat Ivri in order that the book of laws of the state of Israel is not a book of laws of non-Jews. And so, you know, what's amazing is that my daughter now is in the law school in Israel, and she's learning also Mishpatim, and she's also learning Mishpat Ivri, and she's reading lots and lots of Piskei Din, all kinds of court sentencing. And in these court sentences, she's reading many, many references to Mishpat Ivri. So the fact is that Rav Herzog would be very happy that his influence and his suggestion has actually bore fruit. And in fact, I happen to read one Pesach Din in connection with a different shiur that the judge wrote the words. He said, "I will also explain this case according to Mishpat Ivri," and he quotes in Latin, and he says, which is delega ferenda. Delega ferenda. Delega ferenda means with a look to the future law. So this judge said that really Mishpat Ivri is the righteous laws of the Jewish people, and it is what we aspire to, and it's what our court system should really be run on. And slowly, slowly, it's getting moved into the court system. And Bezrat Hashem, you know, just as we saw the prophecy of coming to the land of Israel be after 2,000 years of prayers and hopes, so too, Bezrat Hashem, we will see the prophecy that says in Yeshayahu, Va'ashiva shoftayich kavishona, v'yotzayich kabatchila, v'achreichen yikarelach ir hatzedek kirya ne'emana. And so we should merit the prophecy of Yeshayahu that says that after the Jews will be brought back to the land of Israel, so too God will bring back the judges as they were in previous days, and the counselors as they were in the times of old. And after that, we will be called a city of righteousness and a place of faith. Thank you very much.